You're now listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, broadcasting from sunny Orange County, California. Filmmaker, journalist, and film historian, Paul Booth.
Aloha, welcome to Talking Pictures. I'm your host, Paul Booth. Today we are broadcasting live in downtown Vancouver. It's a beautiful day. We're at the Sutton Place Hotel. We want to start off by thanking the Vancouver International Film Festival, the Sutton Place Hotel, and our guest today is, would you rather go by, is it Emma or Miss Sams? What do you prefer?
Oh, Emma's fine. Emma Sams, any variation is fine.
Thank you so much. So Emma directed, she's an actress with a long list. You can look her up on IMDb, but this is a short film that she directed as part of a program titled Teen Trouble, which is showing today, and it also showed on Sunday. So that shows you the quality of it with multiple showings. Yesterday, for you guys that heard us talking with Sandy, he had a lot to say about the different films. Emma directed The Law of Moments, and we're also joined today by Alice, Lisa, and Charles, her producers. So thank you for being here with us. So The Law of Moments is about teen sisters who haven't been as close as they once were. Emma, why that subject?
Subject is a wide subject, really, because it's about the balance of family members within the family and how sometimes when one needs more attention than the other, then that affects things in a broader sense. And I wanted to look at that through the eyes of one of the girls in the film, the lead, because she's studying physics. And I was trying to examine whether possibly the laws of physics would address the laws of the balance in the family, within those relationships. And I also was interested to see that sometimes, and this is something that I have certainly noticed within families, that the good child sometimes suffers and doesn't get as much attention as they would need, ultimately. So there were many, many topics it covered in these short 15 minutes of The Law of Moments. And I also wrote it too, incidentally, which I think is very helpful if you're directing a project that you've also written.
One thing, sometimes I don't like to over-research if I'm in an interview because I don't want to come across something that makes me biased or actually takes from the fun of me learning it during the interview. So. Was this your directorial debut?
I have directed one music video previously, but this was essentially my directorial debut, and therefore I'm very grateful to Charles Haswell, who's our producer, who financed it as well, for giving me the opportunity to do something so different, you know, having the confidence in me. I tried to convince him that I could do it by telling him and explaining to him that not only had I been acting for many years, but I'd also been writing screenplays for many years and working as a photographer for many years. And I think all of those skills come together to help with what's needed to be a director. I also have two children, and that helps.
Children would almost be like a pre-prep for what it's like dealing with a crew, right? Of course, for a director, yes, Charles. Thank you for financing this film. So this was your directorial debut. Could you tell us about how you went about picking a director of photography?
actually, I should correct you in that being a mother was actually much more useful in working with the actors rather than with the crew.
Oh.
I don't think the crew would appreciate being mothered.
Oh, yes.
In terms of finding a good cinematographer, it was thanks to my cousin, Adam Samuelson, who is owner-operator of the Lumar Crane, which is we also got to use in the film. And he knew Carlos de Havilo quite well already and had worked with him. Carlos has massive amount of experience, mostly as a focus puller, but he's been moving into working as a DOP quite a bit. Recently, he was DOP on second unit of Tim Burton's latest film. So we were extremely lucky to get Carlos to agree to do it.
That's very interesting, because I was going to say there was a real short films. Sometimes you're having to bring together so many elements, you know, this is for the listeners, you're having to bring together so many elements that subconsciously we notice a feature can pull it off because they have 2 hours to do it. But some of the films in here, they range from 10 to 18 minutes. And there's almost like a thing with short films where it's really, really hard to between that 12th and 15th minute. You had a very strong visual sense, and now that you're telling me someone's working with Tim Burton, that was probably a pretty cool, fun blessing. In terms of editing, I'm always interested with short films. Did you have like a 22-minute cut and an 18-minute cut, and then now it's between 15 and 16? What was that like?
We always knew we needed to be in that bracket of 15 minutes, so we never had a longer version of it. We wouldn't have allowed ourselves that luxury, both the time of editing and just knowing that we'd have had to cut it all out anyway. I really wanted to have a proper narrative, a story that had a beginning, a middle, and an end, which some shorts don't have. But that was something that I wanted to squeeze in the framework of a proper story into the 15 minutes. So when I was writing it, that was one of the most.
Yes, I find that interesting because having seen all the films, there were films, and I won't mention them, that'll come in the review. Again, everyone, I will review all 7 films in the program. We're here talking about the Teen Trouble program, and for the show, we're so excited because this is our first live broadcast from a festival. We've covered festivals and then went back to the studio and done shows. So we're here again with Emma Sams. And another question I had for two questions. One, was this the world premiere? And two, is there somewhere that it's going next?
This was the world premiere, so we're very obviously thrilled and delighted about that. And we don't know our next step at this point, but we're investigating that. And I'm very grateful, obviously, to Lisa Perosi, who's our producer, who's doing the quite onerous job at the moment of entering into all the various festivals. We don't know just yet.
Yes, I'd heard yesterday when I was talking with one of the PR people that this is the 5th largest film in North America. So that obviously is an honor. As a show, we were honored to be accepted here. I went to film school down the street, so it was great to return to Vancouver. Do you have, I know with the short and with directors, there's always 1,000 films that influence them, but do you have one or two that you could mention for audiences that were very important to you in terms of your directing style?
I think you write what you enjoy. I've always tried to write with the knowledge that if you're writing something that's beyond any budget, that there's no point in writing it because it won't be ending up being made. So therefore, that possibly makes me have a commercial angle to my writing, which I know some people don't have. But to me, you write to what your parameters are, what resources you have available. If I had an unlimited budget, I think I would be writing and directing entirely different projects.
Yes, that's so true. So true. It's I'm sorry, I didn't watch the credits. Were you a co-producer?
I did not take credit as a co-producer. No.
Okay. Yeah, because I was going to say, with the short film, it is so wonderful if you're fortunate enough to have producers, because that whole writing, directing, and producing, I mean, it's kind of like, when do you know to turn off the hat? So even just with the writer, excuse me, even with the writer-director hat, was there any point where you were like, I don't know, I'm really seeing this as a director, but I'm seeing it differently than how I wrote it? Or was it just really easy to just zero in and bullseye what you needed to do?
Actually, I can't imagine how one could direct something that you didn't write. That would be a new step for me when that happens, because to me it's one and the same. The writing, you write with it in mind exactly how you want to see it. Of course, when you're directing, you have to be very flexible, and different elements come in that you weren't expecting, but at least you know what the original vision was. I have always written in a screenplays in a very visual way and explained how they should end up on the screen, and that would be in the script. But once you've written a project and sold it and somebody else has made it, of course it doesn't end up exactly how you imagined. So to follow through with the writing and then also working with the editor has been very, very good.
Do you have, you talked about being a mother prepping you for acting. You have an extensive acting experience. Do you feel there's a specific lesson that being the director gave you that you didn't have before as an actress?
Well, first of all, being a mother helped me work with the actors, didn't help me be an actress. I've been acting since I was 17. And obviously every film that I've been in as an actress, I've watched and taken note as to how the director has gone about his business. I've also noted how the film is lit. I've noticed how it's ultimately been edited. I notice all the things that I find very interesting. I see how the director works with the actors, not just me, but with the other actors. And as one of the actors on a film, you obviously have, there's no place for you to have an opinion on these things. But I've certainly been always thinking what I would have liked to have said if I were directing. So now to have a voice and be able to speak up and to guide the progress of a day on a film set is very pleasing indeed, but not at all intimidating, because it's the kind of thing I've been thinking in my head for a long time.
That's great. That brings us to the law of moments. I loved the title when I looked at it. I also, with this program, decided that I wouldn't read the synopsis. I just looked at the titles, and I thought, the law of moments, I thought, okay, this, I hope this isn't about a lawyer. No offense if anyone is. And then when it started to say, like you said, the physics, it made me think of a filmmaker I once met in Chicago who was a chemistry major, and he considered it that film was just putting together a bunch of different elements. So he was looking at it as a scientific way to crack the code of making a film. And I found that so interesting. So when I saw that this was the credit sequence, kind of reminded me of A Beautiful Mind and the way Ron Howard tied in mathematics to the character and Russell Crowe. Of course, that was about a mathematician. For any of you that haven't seen it, check it out. Also, for more information about the Vancouver International Film Festival, this is year 35. You go to www.viff.org. That's VIFF.org. That'll give you all the film info you need about the shorts, the features, everything. As an actress, this is just a real quick question. What was it like to spent time on General Hospital, and I don't know. I just had to ask. My mother's watched for almost 40 years,
oh,
so
my goodness.
It was one of those, like, you know, I just have to do it for Mom. I apologize, and please feel to be as brief as you, whatever works.
Well, I'm delighted to hear that your mother has been watching that long. That's fantastic. That's the very good news. That means that the General Hospital is doing something right. It was an enormously pleasurable job for me. And the fact that I've been going back and forth now for as long as I have, nearly 30 years, playing the same role, it's just a lovely, wonderful thing. And I don't think many people can say that they've done that. To produce a show that's on 5 days a week for an hour or an American hour, it's such a huge undertaking. And when you go to the set, you realize it's just a very well-oiled machine. They move very fast. If you can keep up on a daytime show, you can do anything. So without diminishing it by describing it as training, it is a fantastic way. If you can cope with that, you can do anything. If you can keep up with that pace, then any more time that you're given on a different project, absolutely luxury.
Well, thank you for that. I emailed my mother and it showed a picture with your IMDb, and she just emailed me back and said she's lovely. So I wanted to let you know that I thought, okay, cool. If Mom says she's lovely, then I know that'll happen in the morning. So this is, I love hearing about this process. And since I've never acted and I've been a part of, I've worked as a PA on studio films and television shows. And yeah, I like that you brought up that pace, because I've always watched that show and I said, I don't know how they do that. I have no clue how they pull these off 5 days a week. I mean, when you see a feature film and you work on it for a month and then it's not done for 2 years, you're thinking these A-list directors don't get a film done for 4 weeks. So it's awesome to see. But do you think, I guess, like you're saying, luxurious? So did just doing a short, like what kind of days were they, like hour-wise? Did they just fly by, or has the director, did it seem a little more kind of like you're in the trenches, so the days seem longer than they are?
We had 4 days, two separate weekends, to shoot Law of Moments, which is 15 minutes, as you said. And it was rushed, you know, that felt rushed. It was, if we'd have been using multiple cameras, like on General Hospital, if we went outside on location, if we weren't trying to do some fairly ambitious shots, like our crane shot, the opening shot, then it might have felt a little less, you know, fast-paced to shoot in. But it did feel very rushed, and we, of course, were weather-dependent since we were outside, which, you know, you had to have, obviously, a backup set if you're outside, just in case the weather turns on you. But we didn't have really much choices, but being only that we had 4 days to shoot it. I was very lucky that I had such a professional crew. In many senses, obviously, their standard was astronomically high compared to our little project of what we were doing, and budget-wise. However, because they were used to big films, they were also used to quite a bit more setup time. So there was a fair amount of hurrying them along by our first AD that they probably weren't used to.
Now, can you tell us how the first screening went, how the audience was? Was there a Q&A? How did it feel for you? Since they sent me a thing with, I don't know what the order is, because they sent me a thing that's in different order than they say actual order. So what was it like when you finally saw your opening shot on the big screen?
It was, the first thing that happened was the curtains. We were third in the sequence of short films, but when ours was about to begin, the curtains pulled back a bit more because we had chosen to use the animal shaped screen, which I was quite pleased about at the time that we were able to do that. And as those curtains went back, it felt very sort of significant that it, ours was about to begin. I have seen it on a big screen before. We had a private screening of it at the BFI on a big screen, and that was very pleasing. But we were delighted that the audience seemed to understand a lot of the things that we were trying to communicate with it. That it's about choices. And I've just heard that one film got shouted at really awful, in an awful way, at a screening yesterday, that people were shouting garbage at it. So, So now I'm suddenly very grateful that that didn't happen to ours. No, it seemed like a very nice response, and the Q&A session afterwards was encouraging, and people were paying attention. And didn't shout garbage, so we were.
Right. Well, yeah, you're definitely way ahead of the game if they're not shouting garbage. I wasn't eavesdropping. I heard what you guys were saying, and I just think that's audacious. I mean, I don't call myself a critic. I say that I'm a filmmaker who reviews films, because if we get a screener that we don't like, we just say, hey, we'll pass on doing a show. There's no point in trashing an artist's work. I always say it's still hard work to make a bad film. I mean, it's you're up at 4 a.m, you have 14-hour days. Sometimes you have 1 hour sleep, especially if you're directing or writing the short. So there's really no reason to knock someone to that degree. I mean, garbage is like going way, say you didn't like it, don't recommend it. But wow, that must have been an interesting experience. And I think for the other films, did you have one that you particularly enjoyed in the, I guess I'm interested when I talk to people that are in shorts programs, that they kind of say, oh, it was really nice to show with that film. Was there anyone particular that you enjoyed?
I really enjoyed the Argentinian film, which was, I'm trying to remember the name of it now, but it was...
Fabrizio, yes.
Yes. Absolutely delightful. And, I would aspire to produce something like that. I think they had a story to it. They had a beginning, a middle, and an end. It was charming, beautifully shot. I thought that was absolutely super.
Yes, I think that it was what I liked about it was the same thing with your film. Was it touched on a theme that we don't have to say it's only U.S. or U.K. It's human emotions, and that. I like that you're saying Fabrizio's initiation, because they both were themes. When it said sisters not getting along, I instantly kind of shuffled in my chair, because like I have a brother that I don't talk to, and we just started talking after a few years. So I was kind of like, you know, this is, it's sisters, but it's just that basic, you know, I could feel like, okay, this director's coming from her heart and who she is. This isn't just coming from a made-up story.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, real conversation and movie-induced inspiration.